This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Colostrum LD from Sovereign Laboratories. Colostrum LD is clinically proven to maintain optimal immune function, eliminate harmful pathogens, and fight infection, as well as cleanse and prevent the absorption of toxins. Adding Colostrum LD daily to your diet provides the essential nutrition needed to maintain optimal health. To order, just go to sovereignlaboratories.com. That's sovereignlaboratories.com. If you're a first-time customer, you can get a full 5-day supply for free. Just go to sovereignlaboratories.com for Colostrum LD. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein you can get your questions answered by sending them to radioprogram@AOL.com. It's a weekly feature that we run, and it's one of three ways to get questions to us. You can call us during our weekly live program, usually heard on Saturdays, but it may vary depending on the schedule of your radio affiliate, or turns into a podcast on Monday and you can hear it in its entirety, but you can't call live. Or you can go to our homepage at drhoffman.com. And on your PC or Mac, it's not yet enabled for mobile. There's a little rectangle on the right side, and you can click on that rectangle, and you can record a question, and we'll air that question on my weekly program and answer it there. But this is my favorite way of answering questions, because I don't have to go to a commercial break. Right, Layla?
Yay! Right.
With me today is Layla Mutin. She's a nutritionist in residence. We do weekly duets. This is the Q&A with Layla podcast. It's heard every week. And Layla, you do your own podcast. Usually comes out on Fridays, right?
Yes. Yes, I weigh in on Friday.
Okay. What's your... Layla weighs in, right? That's a clever title for a nutritionist. And what are you weighing in on this week?
Bunch of clinical updates, how vitamin K may help with glucose, with glycemic control, for one.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, it's amazing.
Yeah, so vitamin K
may be... We know that it prevents atherosclerosis.
Oh my gosh, I think everybody needs to take some vitamin K now, or something, at the very least.
The K2 variety that also is responsible for the blood sugar effects?
Yes, the K2 variety.
Wow, that is new.
Yeah, that is new.
Send me the study.
I will.
Please, great.
I will, yeah.
Okay. Boy, you really beat me to the punch on that one.
I try.
We're in this like competition here, like who can get the news out fastest. Uh-huh. Before we get to your questions, though, it's summertime, and the living is easy, and it's beautiful outside for outdoor activities.
Yep.
Unless you live in Waco, Texas, where I hear there's the record temperature was 114 degrees this week.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow, wow, wow.
Headline, The Great Indoors. Today's screen-hungry kids have little interest in being outside. Survey shows that 40% of parents have to force their video gamer children to leave the house. And the average child spends just 7 hours a week outside, but more than twice that amount playing video games. Mm. So was it like that when you were a kid?
No. If anything, my mother was chasing us out because she wanted to clean the house.
Were you like
get
a
out of here? It's a nice
urchin?
Day. I love being outside.
Where'd you grow up? In New York?
In New York.
Yeah.
In Queens.
In Queens.
I'm a native. And
right.
Yes. Well, it was safer to play outside. I'm sure it's probably still as safe to play outside. But you know, now with scheduled, structured events and play dates and all of that, I think kids need to go outside, they need to run around, they need to let their imaginations, you know, run away a little bit. And
In three dimensions of real nature.
Yes, exactly, not in video games.
Right.
And with sitting being the new smoking.
Right, even in an urban environment, you know, it's like interacting with real three-dimensional objects with a horizon. You know, it's like sometimes, you know, when I live in the city, sometimes I
actually get horizon deprivation. I like to go running by the river where I can actually see the horizon.
Yeah.
But if you live in the city, sometimes you can go for days at a time without seeing a horizon.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
That's true.
So this is interesting because they say that the average child between 6 and 16 spends only an hour a day outside playing video games over twice as long. So, you know, hey, listen, why go outside? Because, first of all, the Wi-Fi is sketchy. It's hot and muggy, or sometimes it's too cold. It's unpleasant. It's unpleasant.
Oh, my God.
The wind could be blowing. There could be raindrops.
Oh, but what happened to fresh air?
There could be snowflakes. And then there's sometimes bugs outside.
Oh, no. That was a big one.
And by the way, it's really hard to get good Wi-Fi when you're outside.
Yes.
And then it's hard to
see. That was worth a double mention, I see. Okay, the Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi deprivation. And plus, it's hard to see your screen.
Yes. You know, oh, it's terrible.
It's like in a bright sunlight. Mm-hmm. You can't see your screen. So stay inside and just, you know, veg out.
Yeah.
So.
Not a great idea. Our prevalence of ADD may be due to screen time. Our lack of socialization. Children need to learn to be social. They need to play. They need to play with other children.
But why do you need
to
socialize?
They need to be with them.
When you have Tinder, why do you need to socialize? You can just like get a
Tinder. Oh my goodness. Oh my God.
It's like hook up.
Uh-huh. You know. No, we're talking about young children, not Tinder. Okay. But no. It's terrible because they're socially isolated, or the only time they're just having a discussion, if a discussion at all, is on Facebook. There's more depression because of status updates and the perception that somebody else is having more fun than I am.
There's a movie about that I want to see. It's a very sort of cinema verite movie. It's called 14. And it's about a 14-year-old who's a little shy and gawky. She's a terrific actress.
Uh-huh.
And basically it's about the way that kids are phone addicted, and so like a rite of passage. Now, look, being 14 in any era is no picnic. It's a time of adolescence and adjustment. But it's especially problematic these days because everybody's looking at other people's updates, and life looks usually, you know, with the selfies and everybody's talking about all these great things they're doing. It's easy to get into a funk when you feel like you're left out or you're not on a par with all these people doing these marvelous things.
That's true. Very different from a movie called 13.
Oh, okay.
That came out a few decades ago.
Yeah, I remember that movie, yeah.
Do you remember that movie? It's like, this was about adolescent rebellion, about my mother doesn't know anything.
Right.
Holly Hunter played the mother, I believe.
That was a scary movie.
It was. But very different themes now with this.
Right.
That would be interesting to see.
Yeah. So, at any rate, all right, enough digression. Let's get to questions.
We've got a good one. Given the recent steam pipe blast in Chelsea, here in Manhattan, over the weekend here, you've got a tweet, "Hi, Dr. Hoffman, wondering what toxins could be emanating from the blast."
Yeah.
"Why does possible asbestos play a role?"
That's really interesting. And for those of you who are outside of New York, where maybe this story didn't make as much of a splash, although it was a national story, 23rd Street, right in front of the Flatiron Building, is a real hub in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, the day before this happened, I traversed that ground. I crossed that intersection on my way home. And the next day I learned that there was this huge blast with this, you know, lots of this white powdery and mixed in with steam. You know, it went in a geyser column into the sky and was deposited on a lot of unwitting commuters.
Wow.
Because it can happen in the morning. And then also on the windows and balconies and into the apartments of people in the surrounding area.
Yeah.
And the concern is that this was a steam pipe from like 1920 something.
Mm.
And that's a lot of New York is like that. It's like
really
old infrastructure that is eventually going to break down. And they just, you know, just things like that happen. Like they had a big explosion in front of Grand Central a few years ago.
Yes.
Remember?
Yes.
And
a man wound up in the burn unit.
His truck was on top
of the explosion.
I think somebody was killed. One person was killed, maybe. I don't know. But anyway, nobody was killed, thank goodness. But people were coated with this stuff. And unfortunately, and asbestos has been outlawed for a long time. And asbestos...
But it's still in building materials and
it's
fire protection.
They used it, I think it's a steam pipe, so they used it as an insulation for the steam pipe because it's fireproof. Mm-hmm. I mean, asbestos was thought to be the ideal thing because it was absolutely fireproof, and it's a rock, it's a crystal, but it can be put in insulation and molded into shapes.
Yeah.
And it was thought to be the ideal insulating material.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, asbestos, if you look under a microscope, it looks like little tiny daggers.
Oh.
And when you inhale these particles, the particles can lodge in your lungs. And there's a long period of latency, you know, where you might not even notice that you're having problems, but the irritation caused by the physical presence of these particles in the lungs can cause cancerous changes, and the cancer that in question is called mesothelioma.
Ah.
In fact, there's still, you know, you watch TV, you see these ads, you know, we're the best mesothelioma lawyers, you know, call 1-800-SUE-THE-BASTARDS, and, you know, we'll get you on the gravy train to get a settlement, you know, there's like billions of dollars set aside for settlements so that, you know, you may receive $5,000 and the lawyers are going to get, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars.
Now, I imagine some lawsuits will ensue if there was asbestos
big time.
Oh, yeah.
And that's on Con Edison and on the city. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, you know, hey, we just got the word that it's safe. It's all safe. The air quality is great. Didn't they say that after 9/11?
Yeah, I think so.
In fact, Christy Whitman's reputation suffered because she was, I think, EPA commissioner at that time. And she said, no problemo. Air quality is fine down by the pile at ground zero. And turned out
not.
So what's the deal with that? The person wants to know what are the risks.
Yeah, why does asbestos play a role? Well, it is carcinogenic.
Carcinogenic. And... you know, if you get it on your skin, you know, I guess it's going to wash off. The issue is with inhaling it.
Yeah.
And so hopefully these individuals were not exposed.
From a building standpoint, the asbestos on your 1950s house where you have your outside, the outside tiling, if it's made of asbestos, and you're not going to remodel your house, everything is fine.
Right.
You want to leave it alone.
Let sleeping dogs lie.
Right. There's nothing you need to do. Mm-hmm. Just because it's there, it could stay there. But if you're going through a remodel, you have to have that done by people who know how to remove it properly and hazmat and all of that kind
of
thing.
It's a very big deal.
It is a big deal.
Yeah, it has to be done safely because you can't just tear the stuff out, throw it in a dumpster. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not going to
be... You don't take off your siding yourself and do all of that or remove a fire door or some other thing. Yeah, yeah.
So there's a company called Johns Manville, which was the major producer of asbestos products in the United States. And, of course, that company has tanked. Hmm. And basically they set up a fund divvying up the assets of Johns Manville. And over the years, there's still a huge asbestos fund, and you know, get in on the action. If you get a diagnosis of mesothelioma and you worked in an occupation where you may have been exposed, such as shipyards during World War II, notorious for that.
Mm-hmm.
There's an additive effect with smoking. Smoking plus asbestos, a very deadly combination.
Yeah.
Also, apparently asbestos was used in brake linings.
Mm.
So in the automotive industry, automotive workers were exposed to it.
I wonder if it was used in hair dryers. This just triggered a very old memory for me.
Huh.
When I was a teenager, my hair blow dryer.
Yeah.
Okay. My hair blow dryer, when all the news about asbestos came out about then, this had to be in the 70s. My father took apart my hair dryer and removed the asbestos. So.
Not good.
Not good. But it seemed to be this sheathing that was around it.
Right.
He removed it.
Right.
And he put it in the garbage. And that was not the place to put it either, in the garbage.
Right, right.
And he said, here, okay, you could use your hairdryer.
It's okay,
again.
I can think the statute of limitations has expired on that. Plus, I think he's passed away.
Yes.
So we can divulge that on a national,
exactly.
On a national podcast.
We don't have to call the mesothelioma lawyers.
Or the mesothelioma police.
Right.
Okay, folks, at this point, let's pause to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with you. So here goes.
Did you know the benefits of nature's most powerful superfood are universal and always available no matter what your age? This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a nutritional supplement I recommend and use that's clinically proven to maintain optimal immune function, eliminate harmful pathogens and fight infection, and cleanse and prevent the absorption of toxins. It's Colostrum LD from Sovereign Laboratories. Adding Colostrum LD daily to your diet provides the essential nutrition needed to maintain optimal health. With Sovereign's proprietary enhanced delivery system, Colostrum LD is the most effective colostrum available. Colostrum LD has wide-ranging health benefits at every stage of life. To order, just go to SovereignLaboratories.com. That's SovereignLaboratories.com. If you're a first-time customer, you can get a full 5-day supply for free. Just go to sovereignlaboratories.com for Colostrum LD.
Thanks for listening and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. Now back to our questions.
Yes, yes. We have, okay, Dr. Hoffman, this was about your recent newsletter article, Hemoglobin A1C, what is it and why does it matter? So we have a question here from, I don't have a name. The person says, now what do you do? What is the protocol for reducing A1C to under 5.0? Some people cannot eat a diet filled with veggies and fruit.
So I question whether the person who wrote this read the article in its entirety, because the whole point of the article was you don't have to reduce your hemoglobin A1C to 5.0 or less.
Mm-hmm.
It's just in the heading of the article. I quoted some of the real staunch advocates for hemoglobin A1C
being lower
reduction, which include Dr. Perlmutter and also a diabetologist, Dr. Bernstein, Dr. Richard Bernstein, who believes that, you know, it's like, how low should you go? Ultra low, because, you know,
4.8,
because it will protect your brain, your heart, all organs of your body.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's necessary to do it that way. And the other thing is, what they're saying, I think, is a little unrealistic, not just from the standpoint of strict adherence to a diet, but I notice that some people, even on the most impeccable diets, they can't get their hemoglobin A1C down even into the low fives.
Yeah.
They sort of like hover mid five, and that's as good as it gets. And the reason for that is I think there are individual variations, which I talk about in the article, in hemoglobin A1C handling. And let's, you know, without getting into the weeds about what happens biochemically with hemoglobin A1C, there's different genetic patterns of sugar's interaction with the hemoglobin in your blood cells.
Yes.
And some people cannot get it down in spite of their best efforts, so they're doing fine. They'll do fine. I mean, look, Jean Calment, who died at 124, 127, the longest living human on the planet, I wonder if she had a hemoglobin A1C of like 4.8. She probably didn't.
Wow.
Being French, you know, she didn't eat a paleo diet. So, you know, there are other factors involved.
Pâté and red wine diet might be nice.
Yeah.
Well, that's semi-paleo. Well, anyway. But the other thing about A1C is there are certain other things, other circumstances where it could be higher. As we get older, blood sugar tends to go higher.
Mm-hmm.
If I see an A1C of a 5.5 in somebody who's 82, I'm not going to fret so much, unless their diet is not great. Absolutely, I have to explore the diet first. But if after everything else they're doing everything perfectly and they're 80-something years of age at a 5.5, that's as good as it gets.
Well, what's the alternative? They could go into, like, starvation, you know, like a total keto diet where they could become sarcopenic. They just
yes.
become...
And then they're going to be frail, fall.
Yep. Yep.
That's it. Once yep. you fall after yep. a certain age, it's right. pretty much downhill.
Game over. Right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So the point is also, I want to make the point that what you're doing is okay. You're saying, I'm going to be a little permissive of hemoglobin A1C in an older person. I think what they do in the medical profession, they say, you know, often people come to me and they say, here's my blood test. And I say, well, oh, you know, you have a hemoglobin A1C of 6.2 or 6.3, and that's, you're almost in a diabetic range.
Yeah.
And they say, well, my doctor didn't even tell me. And that's because doctors have...
They wait for 6.4.
...a tolerance of higher hemoglobin A1C.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons they have a higher tolerance for higher hemoglobin A1C is because their way of fixing it is with drugs. And the latest study, the ACCORD study and some other subsequent studies, and that's the point of the article, show that artificially lowering your hemoglobin A1C with medication doesn't help. It fixes the number, but ultimately it doesn't increase survival and there are complications associated with the drugs.
Wow. Yeah, that's true. That's true. The drugs are...
So, you know, I agree with you. We have to cut people some slack. You know, please read that article because that article actually really got a lot of traction. And I thought...
And another thing that I want to... I have a little bone to pick with here is this person says, some people cannot eat a diet filled with veggies and fruit. You don't necessarily want more fruit if your hemoglobin A1C is
right,
high.
Right.
So you want to curb that, but you want to eat more fat and protein.
So you just had a patient earlier. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we'll... Of course, anonymously, we'll discuss the patient. Mm-hmm. The patient is concerned about cardiovascular risk.
Yes.
He's a gent. He's in the 60s.
Yes.
He has a plaque score. We did an EBT heart scan on him, and it's like, you know, 200. A couple of hundred. And so he has some risk. And he wanted a second opinion, you know, should he go on a statin? And we ultimately decided there wouldn't be much advantage in going on a statin. But among his risk factors, he had a hemoglobin A1C of 5.7, which is borderline.
Yes.
We like
borderline
it to be 5.6 or less.
Borderline into the pre-diabetes range.
Maybe
right.
he's had fatty livers, so he may have insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome. He's a little bit, perhaps carrying a little extra weight.
Yes.
You know, he's 6'1", 200 pounds. I mean, if he was, a football player or something, that would be acceptable.
That would be fine. But...
Yeah. But, you know, he's an older guy, you know, so... But he does exercise. By the way, he's a very good exerciser. What was your advice? Because he likes fruit. So what did you say to them?
Oh, and he's got a little sugar thing going on. There are many different ways to crave sugar.
Yeah.
And he overdoes fruit.
Yeah.
So we had a long conversation about the fruit he's having.
Yeah.
And what to have instead.
What was his consumption of fruit like?
Oh, maybe five.
Oh, okay.
Five pieces of fruit a
day.
That's a lot.
That's much. And especially, you know, and fruit being healthy, but you know, we have to also... recognize that modern fruit is bred to be sweeter and more luscious and bigger than paleo fruit.
And I mean, more fructose than wild fruit.
Right. Our ancestors did subsist on fruit. Mm-hmm. But by the way, there was a seasonal aspect to that. So they didn't have hot and cold running fruit all year long, like in January, you know, succulent, melons from Guatemala or whatever.
Exactly.
If you look at a wild apple, it's very tart.
Yeah.
And the nutrients are concentrated in it. Mm-hmm. And it is a source of fiber, and the fiber, I think, is good.
Mm-hmm.
But berries, too, are wild. But you didn't see anything like a big honking watermelon growing off a primitive vine in, 15,000 BC.
Right. So we have to take this into consideration. All that fructose does have an impact.
Yeah.
And especially somebody with a history of fatty liver, we have to watch that because it's the fructose.
And I see a pattern, in our patients sometimes, and particularly a tell on that. There are two, actually. One is hemoglobin A1C. Another is triglycerides. We sometimes see an uptick in triglycerides in the summer in our patients.
Yes.
And that's because it's summertime, the living's easy, and there's lots of barbecues.
Beautiful summer fruits.
And those fruits actually taste good because...
Oh, they taste delicious. Nectarines and cherries. And
I don't touch a peach before the month of, July.
Peaches. Love them.
But there's a narrow window where they actually taste good and they're not wooden tasting.
Yes. They don't taste like pumpkin.
And they're good. So people increase their fruit intake.
Yeah.
And they get a little more, I think, loosey-goosey about dieting sometimes in the summer because they're
traveling. They tend to do juice as a thirst quencher.
Yeah.
Maybe more fruit juice smoothies than they normally would be as a refreshment. I mean, who wouldn't love the idea of watermelon juice on a steaming hot day in New York.
So ultimately, what did you tell him in terms of fruit consumption?
Not more than two a day.
So what?
For now.
Are there any particular fruits?
Fruits, yes. All the berries, which are the lowest in sugar.
Right.
He's not on any medication, so grapefruit would be okay. I told
and
him.
And why do you say grapefruit?
Because grapefruit interferes with a lot of medications.
Yes.
There's an enzyme in grapefruit that slows down the detoxification of certain meds like Lipitor, example, and becomes more a higher dose
potent
in the body.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I like plums. Plums are reasonably low in carbohydrates, 5 to 7 grams, depending on the size of the plum. Kiwi is good that way. The Granny Smith apple, that's the tartest apple, which would most
as opposed to the
come
Red Delicious, which is really
exactly
like
the Gala and the Fuji.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot in the Gala and the Fuji.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, you know, another strategy is how do you eat them? You know, you can have your apple slices with some nut butter or something like
that. Yes. You know, or eat them as a dessert. This is the new dessert. Have your main meal.
Right.
Have your 3-egg omelet in the morning first and then have that grapefruit.
Right.
Don't have your half a grapefruit, you know, before you have your the rest of your breakfast. You do it that way. It tempers the absorption of the fructose.
Right. Good. Okay.
Which is the best way to do it.
So are there any circumstances where you would say no fruit to someone?
Yes.
What?
When they have a much higher A1C.
Right.
When...
But frankly, diabetic.
Oh, yeah. Frankly, diabetic. Absolutely. And we
and
would
no,
just...
No starchy vegetables.
No starchy vegetables. I would have to look at their history of blood sugar ranges and so forth. Anybody who's showing a high fasting insulin is another one.
We had a very interesting experiment in our household because we had a gal who was pregnant. Mm-hmm. And by the way, she gave birth to a beautiful... healthy baby, and it's all good.
God bless.
Full term. So she was told she had gestational diabetes, just barely, but she her hemoglobin A1C was good, but she had some blood sugars that were a little spiky. So she got, in fact, wrote an article for our newsletter, and you can find it at drhoffman.com, Alana's story. And she got real scrupulous about checking her reaction to certain foods. And actually caught on. Her husband started doing it, even though he's not diabetic, just for fun, you know, like an experiment. And then other people in the household started doing it just for the heck of it, to sort of gauge their reaction to different things. And they learned some things. And there were some things that were kind of paradoxical. Sometimes they learned that white rice wasn't great, you know, that you think, okay, that could work. Well, it didn't work that well. It sometimes caused blood sugars to spike into the 150 range. And that, if you really want to investigate how your unique body is reacting, do some finger sticks. Get a glucometer. They're inexpensive. And get
I think the strips are more expensive for some people.
Yeah, it's like, remember when you were a kid, there was Pez? So we call the glucometer a Pez dispenser. The strips are expensive.
Just like
the Pez dispenser with the Popeye head, you know.
Right.
That was cheap, but then to fill the Pez dispenser,
that was something.
Yeah, that's a marketing ploy.
Yeah.
Same thing. Many of those devices are like Pez dispensers. But anyway, so people gain some insight. And by the way, Israeli researchers have found that people vary enormously in their reaction to certain foods. The glycemic index, which is said to be the Bible of how you're supposed to react, is not applicable to many people.
It doesn't work in the real world.
Yeah.
Because nobody's just eating a plain baked potato. They're having a steak with that baked potato. That's going to alter the glycemic response in your body of eating that baked potato.
Right.
So the glycemic index in and of itself, it's like looking at one nutrient alone and what's happening. Well, what about the synergy? What about anything else that's happening in your body? Is there any inflammation happening in your body?
You're a unique individual. Every meal is unique. So it's a unique experience every time you sit down to the table. And you can gauge your response and, you know, make yourself a science fair project and learn about yourself.
Yeah. Thank you for your question.
Yep. All right. At this point, we need to pause because we're going to divide our podcast into two parts. Part two, give us a little preview of what we're going to tackle.
So, brain essentials. Is lithium orotate a thing? Is there really anything to this?
Okay, we're going to talk lithium. Which is not just a medication. It's actually available as a nutritional supplement. Is it good for brain health? We'll talk about that in part two of today's Q&A with Layla. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.